Thanks for listening to On Biz Tech, conversations and tips from leading experts in business and technology. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.
Hello, my name is Catherine Bull, and I am Senior Acquisitions Editor at Pearson Education, and I am responsible for the IBM Press Alliance, which is an alliance between Pearson Education and IBM to produce thought-provoking thought leadership books on products and business issues. Today I have Bob Laird, who is an IT architect within the IBM software group, and Bob joined the Enterprise Integration Solutions Group 2 years ago after 20 years of experience in the industry at MCI, and he is responsible for supporting and leading the service-oriented architecture governance and architecture engagements for IBM customers worldwide. He has written a book called Executing SOA with three other authors, Norbert Bieberstein, Tilak Mitra, and Keith Jones, and I'm pleased to have you here today, Bob. Previous podcast that we've done with you, you've talked a lot about organizing for SOA. Why is that a consideration versus just using the current IT organization?
Well, one of the things that we have found with SOA is that while it does a lot of times start as a IT initiative within a particular line of business, its ultimate value is really working across many lines of business and from an enterprise level. And so many IT shops are not set up, and many companies are not set up to work across lines of business. So in order to do that well and to really get the benefits of the business agility that is the reason why SOA is being used in the first place, you need to start thinking about and setting up organizations that enable you to make decisions and to move forward, and the only way that you can really do that is to start setting up and creating those cross-line of business organizations.
So can you tell us a little bit about the state of the service lifecycle and how one transitions from one state to another?
The service development lifecycle, one of the things that is useful to use and think about, and there are many tools that will assist you in this, is what is the state of the service as it goes through that service development lifecycle? So the first state is a plan state, and actually as you identify your services that you want to do at some point in time, whether you're able to do them now or 6 months from now or 5 years from now, you ought to get them into your services registry and repository in a planned state with enough information around that so that if a project comes along that can really build that service, it can see, hey, that does fit in well with our strategy, and we actually already identified that we needed that service. Once a project comes along and there's a funding decision and that project needs to create that service, there's some initial work done around what that service is about and how it's going to actually be architected. And so the state that could perhaps be used there is to note that it is actually solution architected at that point. Once you've actually built a specification and have actually created what that interface is going to be for that service, then it can enter a design state, indicating that at least the specification and perhaps the detailed design around that service has been complete. Typically, the next step you go through is a build and unit test, and once that's completed, you can go into a constructed test. And then once you go into acceptance testing and your certification, at that point you are operational. Two other states of interest is a lot of times that service will change because new consumers come along who need that service or additional business requirements. So what do you do with the old version? And typically we note that state as deprecated with the new version as the operational version that you're dealing with. And then finally, when a version is no longer being used by any of the consumers of that service, it can go into a state called sunsetted. So you will probably have service states that differ from what I've just articulated, but something of that nature to indicate how that state is advancing through the service development lifecycle, and especially the states of planned, operational, deprecated, and sunsetted are of particular importance.
So how is service ownership different from application ownership?
If you think about application ownership is typically done within a particular line of business. So it's clearly defined who has built it, who the IT owner is, and there's probably a specific business owner that corresponds to that particular IT department. If you think about services and you think about creating business agility, typically those services are going to be used by many different lines of business. They are going to have capabilities that may deal with different products, and so that's also dealing with different lines of business. So it starts to become unclear who is the owner of that. Is it the group that originally built the service? Is it the group that needs changes to the service? Or is it some other maybe centralized group that is responsible for anything having to do with common services? So there's no one correct answer to that question, but the point is that from an SOA governance point of view, it's best to understand what the culture is at that organization and make some decisions ahead of time as to who would own a service and also how ownership would be changed when necessary. An example of the latter would be one group has built the service but can't maintain it due to other priorities, so perhaps an ownership change is needed to another group who would take over that service.
So, Bob, one analyst I talked to suggested that SOA needed to be marketed throughout the organization. Do you agree? And if so, how do IT folks go about helping with the marketing?
I definitely agree with that. And the reason for that is typically the SOA initiative starts within the IT organization, but ultimately the benefits are really with the business and at the business level. So one of the things that I have done in the past is to really understand, first of all, you have to create business capability within the IT organization. And one real good way to do that is to work with the Enterprise Architecture Group to understand what the business services, and there are many business maps out there. For example, in telecom, there's the Next Generation OSS and so-called NGOS from the telemanagement forums. And they have specifically the enhanced telecommunications operations model. So those can be used to create real business knowledge and expertise within your IT organization, your subject matter experts, and your enterprise architecture group. And then what you need to do is to go talk with the business users and really talk to them about where the business pain is and help them understand where SOA can help in the concept of business services and business processes. Once they kind of get an understanding of that, they get much more excited and interested about SOA. You have a similar communication problem on the IT side. IT programmers and developers and designers and testers will feel very threatened by SOA because it's new and maybe their jobs are going to go away and what's going on with that. SOA is actually a great opportunity for IT to upskill and to learn new concepts and technical capabilities and to really move up the value chain and understand some business concepts. So getting your IT colleagues to understand that and maybe having some brown bags, some ideas and concepts expressed on your intranet and using websites and having all hands and having skip levels. So all of those basic concepts of communication to get the idea of SOA across, somebody needs to do that. And so within perhaps the SOA governance function, making sure that that's done, working with the right stakeholders in the various groups, and actively marketing SOA is very critical, I believe.
You have a new book that's going to be coming out in 2009 on SOA governance, and you've teamed up with one of your authors on executing SOA, Tilak Mitra, and have also teamed up with Clive Gee and Bill Brown. What is that book about, and why did you choose to focus on the governance aspect of SOA?
Pretty much every customer that we went in and talked to about SOA was also asking us about SOA governance. There's been a lot of, especially a lot of analysis by people like Gartner and so forth, in which they said your SOA projects will fail, especially as you start going cross line of business and get more enterprise, if you don't have some level of SOA governance. And certainly there have been a lot of books. There are a lot of books out there that will have a chapter on SOA governance. Our book that we're talking about today does. But what I noticed and what I noticed in looking at some of the things that other organizations have done is there was a lot of material about what to do with respect to SOA governance and not really a whole lot about how to do it. So being a good enterprise architect, I like to break things down into patterns and how you do things and how you go from step one to step two to step three. So we thought it's about time to get much more scientific about how one approaches SOA governance. And myself and my colleagues decided it was time to put our heads together and do something that would really help in the marketplace and help our colleagues who are having to wrestle with this very difficult area of SOA governance.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing that book, and that's also coming out from IBM Press. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Thanks for listening to On Biz Tech, conversations and tips from leading experts in business and technology. For more information, visit informit.com/podcasts and subscribe today.